Hello, welcome to another episode of Papa Bear Hikes.
Well, many of you, if you've been listening to the channel, I recently did an episode. What am I doing in 2022? I was asked a question, actually. And so my list is always fluctuating. I'm always looking for something new to do. Well, a few weeks ago, I typed in Finger Lakes Trail and came across a couple of gentlemen who are creating some content that I think could be very helpful to the hiking and backpacking community. I'd like to welcome the creators of Out on Trails, the YouTube creators, Mike and Tom. Mike and Tom, welcome to Papa Bear Hikes.
Thanks for having us.
Let's start out by you guys telling us a little bit about yourselves. And since there's two of you, I'll decide who goes first. Mike, you've already got the privilege of having your name first, so we'll start with Tom.
A little bit about myself. I am a wayward child here. I'm just a giant kid. I like to backpack. I like to hike. I like to kayak, canoe, all that fun stuff. In real life, I have a couple different jobs. I am a rowing coach and a sales associate at a retailer that we're all familiar with, but I'm not going to name. And I just like to try to pretty much get outside as much as I can. Just hang out with my dog, Jack, who, if you do watch any of the videos, you might come across. I've actually got him right here with me, tip-tapping around. So if you hear any, scattle around the floor, that's him.
All right, Mike, how about you?
Sure. So I am a child of the Midwest. I know you guys share some common geography between you. But yeah, I grew up in the Midwest, a little north of Milwaukee, close to the city, but far enough outside the city that I still had like farm fields across the street from me growing up. So I kind of cut my chops like running around in the woods and, exploring, learning things about the things that I found. My grandfather used to take me out hiking a lot as a kid. We didn't do a lot of like family camping or anything like that. So I'd say I'm an adult onset backpacker. But I did a lot of, hiking and spending out, time outdoors as a child. So that's kind of where I got my start and my interest in what I do now.
Well, Mike, one of the things we try to inspire people to do on this podcast is try something new in the outdoors. And I'm always telling people, you're never too old to get started. You don't need to have started when you were 11 or 12 years old to become a backpacker. There's people that don't do it until they're in their 50s and 60s. So it's always great to hear somebody taking it on as an adult.
I think that's also, maybe part of one of the goals of our channel is just trying to show that it's not really so hard to get out there and just go for a hike or go for, overnight or even these like 5-6 day trips we go on sometimes. I think, people can get a little caught up and overwhelmed. And so honestly, for me, it's just a walk in the woods, and just trying to make everything accessible and, help people realize that there's a lot of fun right outside their door.
Well, Tom, quite honestly, what inspired me to want to ask the two of you on as guests was I felt that was the audience that you were talking to in your videos. It wasn't, we're going to through hike the AT or the PCT. It was anybody can grab a backpack and do an overnight. And what you are doing here is you're highlighting trails, not just where you live, but you've been all over the country and you're finding these interesting hikes that, in my opinion, at least are good entry level, good start off points for a lot of people just saying, hey, I want to give this a try. I guess what I'm asking is the direction you guys are going in with this is you're going to continue to give us content then or of looking for these trails that are more accessible just for the everyday backpacker, so to speak.
Yeah, I think so.
Absolutely. I think, part of that is we looked at a lot of people getting out into the outdoors during the pandemic and a lot of people getting out into the outdoors, maybe for the first time even. So we wanted to, again, highlight some of those entry level trails and things that can be accessible to everyone. And also some places that people may not have heard of before. I think, with a lot of people getting outside, a lot of those well-known destinations, I think are pretty crowded these days, and that may not be the experience that everybody necessarily wants when they're, you know, going into the outdoors or looking for more of a wilderness experience. So we're trying to portray a broad and diverse palette of locations for people to choose from.
Well, Mike, that's the other thing I noticed. And again, that was an appeal to me. Due to the pandemic, I had to change some hiking plans over the last 2 years. And one of those changes was I went up to the Adirondacks and started doing something that I was not sure I wanted to. And that was, surprisingly, I wasn't sure I wanted to do the Adirondack 46. So I wasn't sure if I wanted to do the Adirondack High Peaks. And here's the reason why. I just feel there's an overuse issue there. And you guys are familiar enough with the Adirondacks. There's some lower peaks there that are just so interesting. That give you incredible views. Hurricane Mountain, for example. Catamount. Those are really nice hikes that give you really great views.
Yeah, and very accessible. You know, and for people who love doing the lists, there's things like the Fire Towers, the Saranac 6. There's a couple of those smaller ones. It's funny you say, you know, kind of looking at doing the 46, because I, you know, as a kid, I did a bunch with the Boy Scouts or with my family, but never really kept track of them. It was just kind of, we just did, you know? And now, basically since the pandemic, I've got friends that are going up there, you know, every couple weeks or so. And I just kind of started tagging along with them, honestly. You know, now I'm looking at, I think I've got like 12 of them done just in the last year, just kind of going up with people. So I would not call myself a peak bagger in any way. I think that one of the things for me that's kind of important is that we try to show ourselves doing, you know, fairly responsible backpacking and fairly responsible things. A joke through, at least a little bit of the planning phase was that we were, you know, maybe going to show ourselves using the restroom every time, which we decided not to go with, for obvious reasons. But, you know, just trying to, you know, show people and make little notes about just being a little bit more responsible. You know, maybe making sure you're actually using cat holes and stuff in certain situations. And on one of the more recent videos, you know, Mike started doing some intro kind of spiel at the start of these, which I think is a really good idea. And we're going to put a little bit more kind of informational content into that couple seconds at the beginning. You know, we did a Cascade Porter, not technically winter. If you look at it, it looks like winter, but it's just fall, in the Adirondacks, what it looks like up there. But you know, Mike mentions, you know, make sure you have your micro spikes and your snowshoes, even if you don't need your snowshoes while you're out there. If there's 8 inches of snow, it's necessary. It is the law, and it's, you know, a safety aspect for you and for other people out there.
Yeah, down in the Catskills, the same common sense or the same principle should apply, but up in the Adirondacks, it's actually a law. You're supposed to have snowshoes on.
Yep, 8 inches off trail. So even if it's only 2 inches on the trail, if it's 8 inches off the trail, you got to have them. And, you know, that's so that you don't punch a hole in the ground and then either break your ankle or lead someone else to break theirs. And there's also, if you pay attention to the, you know, kind of the reports, it's way more common than it should be that people end up barefoot tumbling down a mountain. So make sure you're prepared, you know, and we're trying to.
The Catskills every year, there seems to be a report at least once a winter. Somebody starts their way up one of these summits and either can't make it up and back down, or they get up there and can't get back down.
Well, and to be honest, I think that, you know, Mike kind of called me into this. We're college roommates, you know, we're longtime buddies, but kind of, what was it? Summer 2020, Mike calls me up and he's like, I'm tired of being an accountant. Let's do something different. So I like to think that maybe he called on me, not only because I'm a good friend of his, but because I've had some experience doing this. And we're just trying to kind of share that experience so that people are a little bit more prepared. I personally, every time I go up on a mountain, kind of I'm planning on not being able to make it back down. I obviously want to, and I bring everything to make myself as well prepared as possible, but I'm always ready to camp up on there. So you'll, you know, again, especially in those high peaks videos that we end up putting out, you'll see I'm almost always carrying like a pack. And the reason is because I have a sleeping bag, I have a shelter, I have extra clothes. I could spend the night up in that mountain at negative 22 and, you know, it wouldn't be a nice night. I wouldn't be happy, but I'd make it through.
Right. You'd be alive the next morning.
Yep.
And, you know, that's important because with the pandemic, more people are going out and we're seeing more people going outside that maybe haven't prepared themselves properly and not on purpose, but just because they haven't done enough research or maybe they didn't think to seek out a group of people or a friend that has experience in hiking. Like Mike reached out to you and your experience goes back to when you were a Boy Scout.
And I mean, a big part of it is also the kind of the people that I've, as an adult, gone out with. You know, I like to surround myself with people that are more competent than me out there too. And then kind of take away from their stories. So honestly, the hope is that I never have to spend, a night on the side of the mountain, but, you know, I'm ready and I can say from experience chatting with people that, you know, it's something that is possible to make it through, you know.
First of all, have you been doing these winter hikes? Have you been up in the Adirondacks? I'm sorry.
So I think you two both enjoy winter hiking a lot more than I do. I'll throw that out there just to kind of start out with. And I give you guys the utmost credit and respect for, you know, taking those endeavors on. You know, I, like I said, I have done a lot of hiking in the past. I haven't done a lot of backpacking. So that's like a newer thing to me. And I think Tom has been extraordinarily helpful in, you know, getting going in that respect. As far as, you know, looking for hikes and planning things out, I've been taking a lot of that on myself. And, my, sort of where you see a lot of the southwestern hikes is a lot of my influence, because this time of year I like to try and follow the sun as much as I can.
We'll be back after a quick break.
You ever think about what might be in the water you're drinking every time you fill up your water bottles while you're in the outdoors? I try not to, and I really don't, because I use Sawyer water filters. Sawyer filter technology, because of their high standards, every filter is individually tested 3 times through the process. I've been using the permethrin product for years now to protect me from, well, quite frankly, ticks, and the picaridin to keep the flies at bay. Don't let bad water, insects, or a tick bite cut your trip short or even ruin it. Use Sawyer products. Go to your local outdoor retailer and ask for Sawyer products, whether it's a water filter, insect repellent, they're likely to have it. You can also go to Sawyer's website and read more about these incredible high quality products that they offer those of us who enjoy the outdoors.
Yeah, well, I just spent almost 2 weeks in Florida and it didn't suck. It didn't suck sitting there looking at below zero temperatures back home and walking outside in shorts and a t-shirt and or going for a bike ride in the afternoon.
Yeah, that sounds like my kind of deal.
I'll admit I'm going down to Florida in a couple of weeks for another gig. Nothing for the channel here, but I'm quite excited and looking forward to some warm temperatures. So you know, I do it more for the views. I don't love the cold, but I love the view from the top of a mountain, especially in the winter, especially when you don't have a bunch of other people around.
Talk about some of the hikes, because it's pretty cool that, Mike, you have your New York, your upstate New York experiences, and you're able to bring those to the channel. Mike, you have, you know, you have the Southwest hikes that you like, and Tom, mm-hmm. you've got the New York ones, and you're able to bring that to the channel for the audiences. And you know, there's two different approaches of hiking. I mean, of how to prepare for those hikes, because you have different elements in the Southwest than we do up here in the Northeast. Has that helped the two of you as hikers learning from each other like that from the different areas?
I think for me, definitely.
Yeah. I love watching Mike become more and more confident. not necessarily, you know, better or anything like that, but more confident in himself and his planning and getting out there. You know, it kind of all goes back to that. This is not hiking and camping is not supposed to be exclusive. It really shouldn't be. It should be for everybody. And I really think that, you know, kind of there is this big fear, you know, that you're going off into the wilderness with scary bears and lions and tigers and whatnot. And, you know, even bears, which, you know, are a concern in a lot of the places that we've gone. It's just making sure that, you know, kind of not only the rules, but kind of the general standards of the area. And, you know, different areas have different, you know, kind of different ways of dealing with those things. So I think that we do a little bit of kind of background check and look into what's the same or different about this place that we're going. We do live in different places, so a lot of what we do is separate. But then I think we're always excited to get those couple trips together where we can actually, you know, go out and spend a week just hanging in the woods and taking some film and enjoying life.
And for you, Mike, it sounds like this has been a learning experience right from the beginning, from when you reached out to Tom.
Yeah. Oh, indeed. I mean, you know, like Tom said before, I think a lot of people sort of look at it and go, this is overwhelming. There's so much to know. There's a lot of gear. There's, you know, the animal encounter issue. There's, there are just countless things that you can worry about. And I think I was listening to one of your old episodes earlier, and I can't think of exactly which one it was, but you mentioned like paralysis by analysis. And, yes. and I think a big thing for me was just sort of like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to jump into it. I'm going to use resources, right? And gather as much information as I can, but I'm not going to let it sort of overwhelm me and bog me down. I'm going to use it to my advantage and to use it sort of as a stepping stool and really dive into this sort of headlong.
Pulled on this thread just a little bit, but, and it's appealing to the newbies, the people just getting into this. And something I hear from people, and I get emails about this from time to time, it's gear, it's equipment, it's the cost. And what I'm finding is a lot of people, when they're seeking out going into backpacking, they will get consumed with these videos of people who are hiking the long trails, you know, the big three, the AT, the PCT, the CDT. And that could cost you a lot of money getting started, the gear you need. Yeah. Could you guys talk a little bit about gear for a newbie?
So I've gone through years and years of development with my gear here. So I definitely, you know, I started backpacking as a, you know, teenager, back in the late 90s. And, you know, I remember we would do multi-day treks and I'd be carrying a bag that was like 50 something pounds, loaded. And to me now, that's an absurd amount of weight that I just wouldn't be able to bear. So everything for me has gone lighter and lighter and lighter and lighter. That's where it gets really expensive. And I'm not going to say that my kit is cheap. But you get it piece by piece, and you get, kind of the big three first, which is going to be your sleep system, sleeping bag, sleeping pad, your, tent, and your backpack itself, because your backpack itself is going to be between 2 pounds and 5 pounds, depending. So if you want to kind of lighten up real quick, those are the places you put your money, is into one of those, and you put it where you can. Other than that, I honestly, you know, there's lots of used gear out there. It's not always the easiest to find, but now with, you know, Facebook marketplaces, there's a backcountry Facebook page just all for kind of gear swapping and gear sales. You know, you can find things probably locally on Craigslist, that kind of thing. I know that a lot of the major retailers are actually moving into used sales. And that's something that we're going to be seeing more over the years here. And, you know, individual companies like Patagonia are really looking to kind of get back product, fix it, and sell it again. And that helps keep things out of the landfills. It helps reduce kind of, you know, fast fashion cost on the planet, but it also allows people a little bit easier access to kind of some of that nicer gear. And you don't have to have the nicest, and you don't have to buy it all at once. It really, you know, at the end of the day, you need something to sleep in, you need some clothes, and you need a shelter. So that can be anything from, you know, I've got a $30 tarp that I can use instead of a tent, and it does me just fine for most of the year.
Well, I always tell people the first thing is see what you can borrow too.
Yeah.
It starts there.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And you could buy some quality on the low end of, you know, quality entry level gear. And I'm not talking going to a big box store and buying something cheap off the rack there, but there's some name brand manufacturers that could sell you a good pack to get you started without breaking the bank or making you second guess yourself. I'm investing all this money into, and I'm not sure if I'm even going to like this. Mike, you're new to this. What was your approach with your gear?
So I leaned a lot on Tom. I'll say that to begin with. And he was, again, extremely helpful as far as guiding me, I think, kind of in the right direction. And I think sort of the approach that I took was I wanted to put together like a reasonable kit and not break the bank. So not everything that I have is ultralight, Dyneema. You know, I have, you know, again, invested some money into sort of what I would call like the big three sort of, and made sure that I have things that are going to be reliable, that are going to be, you know, safe, that are going to keep me warm when I need to be. And those were sort of the priorities for me. And then I think I've sort of filled in some of the gaps with, you know, less expensive gear that still is perfectly usable, but isn't necessarily the most recognizable brand name or the hottest thing on the block at the moment. Especially when it comes to like hiking clothes, man, I would say that what you see on my back in a lot of these videos probably cost less than $30, you know, from the shorts and the top, you know. I put a little bit of money into having a good pair of shoes because I think that's important. But, you know, when it comes to just like, here's what I'm wearing today, you know, I definitely am not the clothes horse or the fashion police when it comes to what you need to get out on the trail.
You're not a Panagucci guy.
yeah, that's not necessarily my game.
I'm with you. Yeah, this summer will mark 50 years from my first backpacking trip, Mike, and I wear the cheapest clothing, and here's why. I've bought those expensive shirts. I've fallen into that trap, and you know what? They tear. They get snagged. They wear out. I go with the cheapest I could find.
Yep. But, you'll notice Mike wears like, you know, just some gym shorts in a bunch of the videos. You mm-hmm. know, just it's whatever you have around is often fine. I mean, you want to be appropriate for the weather that you're going into, but the truth is you probably have it for clothing sitting around your house. Just don't wear cotton, you know?
Yeah. I hiked the long trail with two bathing suits.
Yeah.
I did a shakedown hike wearing my bathing suit just for the heck of it. I said, you know, these look kind of comfortable. They had some pockets in the front. Nope. It's just an overlay. Let me see how this goes. And first of all, they dry fast. If you want to clean them out in a creek or something, you want to rinse them off if they get wet from the rain. And yeah, that was great. I've kind of gotten away from your traditional hiking shorts for that reason. I'm always looking for something that's quick dry or a cheap pair of athletic shorts to hike in.
Yeah, there's actually there's a video that I think Mike is working on editing right now where I am literally wearing a dress shirt on this overnight hike. And it's because it's like, I mean, I like the shirt, but it's like an athletic material, you know, it's stretchy, it's Lycra, it breathes. And it was appropriate for what I needed, kept my arms covered. And I was like, yeah, sure. Let's just look a little dapper on the trail.
Yeah, why not? Yeah, I have to go out and spend the dollars to look good. If you're clean, you'll look good on the trail, let's face it. So now let's talk about some of your hikes. Okay. I've watched a lot of your videos, as I said, and I really enjoyed them. Can I beat the storm? That video there. Tell us a little bit about that.
So that was actually that was a hike that I did by myself. That one was it was kind of a throw-in, to be honest. So I had planned to be in that area to hike at a different state park. And I like to try and challenge myself to sort of group hikes together. So if I'm going to be in a particular location, I want to try and find, you know, 4 to 6 hikes, let's say at least, that I can kind of swing through in a few days or in a week. To make the most of traveling to a different place. And so this wasn't my primary destination when I got down there. And I actually had to change plans because of the weather. So I was actually going to go over to Guadalupe Mountains National Park and do some hiking there. And I was actually planning to do an overnight trip. And there was a big storm coming through, huge winds. And I wasn't going to camp up on a mountain in 80-mile-an-hour winds. And so I was like, okay, time for plan B. And so I found this Lake Meredith, which was a beautiful area. And the only catch was I had to be able to fit this hike in before the storm came in. And it dumped a good bit of snow in North Texas the day after I did that hike. So it was really cool to see that scenery change over the course of a couple hours as those dark clouds moved in.
Yeah, that's just something you don't see in that part of the country. That's a unique time to be there and a unique experience.
Absolutely.
Now, I've interviewed the executive director for the Ice Age Trail, and I also interviewed Emily Ford, who last year thru-hiked the Ice Age Trail in the winter. She did a winter thru-hike of the Ice Age Trail.
And I remember reading
did a video on that. Awesome. Yeah. Yeah. I interviewed her. Really, really good interview. And what an incredible person. Your experiences on the Ice Age Trail.
So for me, the Ice Age Trail is what sort of I grew up with. I mean, there's an access point to the Ice Age Trail about 15 minutes from where I grew up. And so it's sort of near and dear to my heart in that way. It's just because it's what I'm familiar with. Right. And, it's another one of those things where I think you can do a lot of section hiking without having to through hike the entire trail. I mean, again, I have a lot of respect for through hikers, and it's not necessarily something that's for everyone though, right? And so I think over the next couple of years, actually a goal that I've kind of set for myself I want to hike the entire Ice Age Trail, but I want to do it in digestible segments that I think, you know, that I can hold out there as something that people can recreate themselves.
Getting out there and enjoying it. Don't care what it is. You know, don't worry about what it is or how you're going to be perceived. Just the fact that you're out there enjoying yourselves. That's what's important.
Who are you doing it for at the end of the day anyway? I mean, I think even with our videos, I'm not sure about Mike, but I'm pretty sure, that we're still doing this for ourselves. So for me, it's just an excuse. It's just a reason to get out and get the endorphins and enjoy life for a couple of days before I have to get back to the grind. It gives me something to look forward to too.
Yeah. The lists are fun. They help keep us motivated. But in my book, I say this at the end of the day, and I'll clean this up for our G audience of the podcast, who really gives a crap besides you? I mean, you know, when I, like, and this is what I went through when I got home from the long trail. I wasn't even going to send in the paperwork to get the certificate. I took, I think, 8 months before I even did it, because when I got home, I enjoyed it as great as an experience it was. But I also realized on the ride home on the bus, I was thinking, this was great, but you know, my friends and family will be happy for me, but they're going to be happy because I'm happy.
Yeah. They don't care that you did it, to be honest. Right. I mean, someone probably does, but you know.
I think we could all use a little bit more of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm actually, I'm planning on doing the long trail this summer. That's my second half of June, beginning of July, probably plan. Mike's a little frustrated with me because I don't plan a whole lot very well. we're working on that, but,
Mike, are you joining Tom on the long trail hike?
Yeah, that's going to be, Tom's breaking the news here. That's going to be our next, big hike together. Yeah. We're going to be through hiking the long trail this summer. So yeah, we're going to be,
I love it when we can break news here on Papa Bear Hike podcast. This is great.
Oops.
Mom, dad, loved ones. I don't pay attention to this. They were going to get around to telling you, don't worry.
Like I said, though, doing it for myself. I mean, like I just because of my job situation, I happen to be pretty free in the summer if I want to be. And so I was like, what can I do that's going to make like this year just better than, you know, anything? And like, I'm going to walk Vermont end to end. Yeah, sure.
And my book is about my experience on the long trail. I'm definitely going to have to ask you guys to come back on after you do the long trail.
All right.
Because yeah, I loved Vermont. And you know what? I love hearing people's experiences after they've done the trail, because to hike the trail is one thing. It's a cool trail. You're going to experience some awesomeness every day on that trail, pretty much. Once you, from Killington North, or maybe even from Stratton Mountain North, you're going to have days where you're going to get to that summit. You're going to get to that ski slope and sit down and get a cool breeze and eat your lunch or take a nap. Or you're going to be standing there at Stratton Mountain and taking in the history of it, that this is where it all started for the Appalachian Trail. You know, this is where Benton McKay sat and came up with the idea. And it's pretty cool. And when you get off trail in Vermont, it's so much fun too. The people in Vermont and the businesses are just so friendly to the hiker community. I think they're just friendly to everybody. I think it's just a very Vermont thing. It's just to be nice and to be friendly. And getting around, I don't think I ever spent more than 10 minutes waiting for a ride. I'd put my thumb out there, first, second card, come by and give me a ride. Most of them wouldn't just give me a ride. They'd offer me something cold to drink.
Yeah.
And on two occasions, at least, it was of alcoholic beverage nature. So
lemonade.
Yes. Lemonade. Adult lemonade.
Yeah. My mother's from the Albany area, but her family, dad's side is from, North Adams, Massachusetts area. And, mom's side is from, Northern Vermont, up near, well, on the islands up there. So I've spent, I don't know, it totals to years of my time up in Vermont, and it is really a second home to me. That's largely why that ended up being kind of choice on where I wanted to go. Was I wanted to get up there and you know, really hit Vermont. While the Finger Lakes Trail, I've also kind of wanted to do as a through hike. But just because, like Mike was saying, with the Ice Age Trail out in Wisconsin, Finger Lakes Trail, you know, for most people in New York is within an hour or so, at least a section of it. And for me, just like with Mike, it's about, I don't know, probably a 30 to 40 minute drive to the closest part. But just something that you can kind of hit and do as sections and sections and sections. For the long trail, I thought that it made sense just to go out and just do the whole thing and really just try to, you know, take my crack at through hiking.
Now, the long trail, if you're going to go out and do a through hike, it is really a fun trail to do. And breaking it down into chunks is pretty easy. You know, depending on your hiking pace, you can easily get from a resupply point to resupply point every so many days. There are shelters and campsites every 5 to 10 miles. So it is a good first time through hike. I may end up doing it again someday. I don't.
You can join us.
I haven't made my plans for this year yet.
Yeah, I think you know, the family proximity to the trail also makes it a little easier for me, because, you know, in the back of my mind, like I mentioned with, you know, climbing a mountain, you're never really quite positive you're going to make it back as planned. You know, I kind of figured that this was, you know, on the long trail, you're never probably more than 2.5 hours from Burlington, you know? So, worst case scenario, I could always try to get some help and get a ride out from some cousins, you know?
The other thing is, on the long trail, there's typically enough people out there. You're never really out there by yourself. There's people going north and southbound, especially when you're south of Killington. I went and I was in that AT bubble. So there were always plenty of people. I'm not going to say overcrowded, not to the point where I felt like it was overcrowded. It was actually kind of cool meeting these people from all over some from different parts of the world that had hiked that far hiked all the way up to Vermont from Georgia. It was actually kind of cool to get to talk to the people that had done that and hearing their experiences. But my first solo through hike was, or attempted through hike, like I said, I broke it up into over 2 years. At some point, somebody's going to walk by.
Yeah.
I mean, after you get even the northern part of Vermont, especially in season, there's still plenty of people going up there and hiking those trails.
I'm excited.
Yeah, I bet. I just completed a solo episode on this about how torturous it is for me. Somebody wrote me a message about, obviously, I've been listening since last year. I go through this every winter. I come up with a list of trails I want to finish. Finger Lakes Trails, I'm down to like 140 miles left to do on that. And that's on my possibility of finishing up this year. But then my middle son contacts me last night and says, "Dad, why don't we do the Tahoe Rim Trail?" He lives out in Washington State. "Why don't we do the Tahoe Rim Trail this year? You know, you can fly out here. We can knock that out. It'd be a lot of fun." I'm like, "Oh yeah, maybe, you know."
One of my coworkers is planning that right now.
I will likely hike the long trail again. That's how much I enjoyed it. And Mike, are you guys going to be videoing the trail and sharing it with your channel?
That is indeed the plan. Yeah. So we hope that everything goes smoothly enough that we don't have to do a lot of editing stuff out. But yeah, that's at this point in time, the goal is to bring all the camera equipment out there. And I mean, that's like a whole nother thing when it comes to hiking and backpacking. And we try to not to let too much of that show through. But it's an exciting challenge for us. So yeah, we're I think both very excited to take that on.
You'd be amazed how heavy camera stuff is, even the light stuff, and how quick batteries die.
Well, I'm borrowing one of my son's GoPros because I'm trying to start a YouTube channel right now. I've got some videos up there. It goes by Martin Outside, not Papa Bear Hikes. And these are just on day hikes. And I took his GoPro with me down to Florida. It was the first time I tried using it, and I couldn't believe how fast the battery.
No.
I didn't feel like I've been using it that long, but it seems like it goes fast. I've been using my phone up till now, but I really don't like the idea, especially if I'm going to be out for a week or two, relying on my phone to be taking videos and pictures with.
I play with GoPro for the most part. Mike's got a slightly more professional camera. But yeah, the GoPro battery issue, the battery struggle is real. I've got one of the newer ones. Got a 9 that actually seems to work fairly well. But in these cold weather ones, you know, when it's negative whatever degrees, it gets a little confused on how it's supposed to work. And then the battery dies in, you know, 20 minutes. you got to make sure you're keeping them in warm places, not just in, you know, a random spot in your pack. Because that cold will just zap it too. So
Mike had talked about his cold weather experience down in Texas, right? Almost getting snowed on, having to beat a snowstorm. In October, you hiked Cascade in October, and it's not a surprise in the Adirondacks for there to be snow. You almost expect it.
Yeah, it was November. But yeah, we had, when we started that hike, it was just over zero. I want to say it was around 5. I try to keep Mike updated on the temperature sometimes. He does most of the editing. So occasionally in the stuff that hits the floor, you know, it'll just be my face complaining about how cold I am. But yeah, it started off at about 5 degrees. I actually had a buddy of mine who hasn't, you know, just talking again about the accessibility, a buddy of mine that hasn't been out camping or cold weather hiking or any of that stuff for years and years and years. And he was able to borrow a bunch of stuff from me, and he had some stuff, and, you know, he managed to piece everything together. It really didn't cost him anything to go up and do that trip. But you know, we chose an accessible one. We did a little bit of, well, I had a little bit of background that I knew it was a more accessible one. But we did a little bit of research, you know, and like you were saying earlier with the long trail, you aren't really out there alone. I mean, in the Adirondacks these days, it may be a wilderness, but, you know, even on the ones that are more herd paths and stuff like, Santinoni and, going out and doing like Emmons and stuff like that, there still are going to be people out there that you come across. So anyway, yeah, it was a good time. We went out there, managed to hit the two peaks. It only took us about 5 hours. The snow wasn't too heavy, so we didn't end up using our snowshoes, but we did make sure we had them. 'Cause you know, but who knows, it could have snowed that day. And actually by the end of the day it was, but we were close to the bottom by that point.
I did Cascade in August of 2020, and I remember getting up there and the wind just blowing and having to put on my rain jacket to stay warm. That's how bad the wind was blowing across it. What was it like going up Cascade in November? Did you have to put micro spikes on or anything, or was
funny
it
enough, I also wore my rain jacket. I had a fleece on underneath and a wool shirt underneath that, but I had my pit zips open. You know, I was actually still letting some air through. It's funny, in the winter, it's actually you spend more energy focusing on not overheating, as you know, you're probably aware, and it's. Mostly you're trying not to sweat. So if you're a little chilly, that's perfectly fine. If you're warm, that's where you hit the problem. So yeah, the weather was pretty, honestly, perfect. Bluebird skies. We got up, we did Porter first and had just a clear, totally clear view of Cascade. We were the first people to hit the summit that day. So, we hit Porter first. We could see people summiting Cascade a mile away or whatever it is, and then watch them kind of go down. And then as we started to go down, other people started coming up Porter, and then just kind of swapped as we hit Cascade. So we actually had both, believe it or not, both peaks entirely to ourselves for, you know, 15, 20 minutes each. And that was really nice. And it was incredible views, incredibly clear sky. I may never go back and do those two mountains again. Because I don't think I could have a better experience than I had, in the summer. It's, you know, fairly crowded. And honestly, if I do go back, it's going to be because I decide that I am a peak bagger, which I'm not.
keep trying to deny that too, but you know what?
But if I get to 44,
those two will suck you in.
If I get to 44 winter peaks, I will go back and I will do Cascade and Porter and finish off the winter 46. But you know, it was glorious. It was just fantastic. And for me, I was up there with a buddy of mine on what the world may see as kind of a heavy drinking day, or at least I used to, which was right after Thanksgiving. But both my buddy and I are sober these days. So there was also kind of a nice little aspect for me for that. Just being up with a guy that I have a long and possibly sordid history with. But just going up there and being human. It's pretty nice.
Mike, hiking in the snow, I know it's a different experience. And I've done Cascade in the summer. Do you feel like it's just a totally different experience? I don't know if either one of you then. This may be a question for both of you. When you go back to an area, you've hiked in an area in those other three seasons. And then you go back and experience in the winter the difference, right? With no leaves on the trees, you get a clearer view. Like when I did Porter, you had like almost like, you know, in an area you could see straight through, but I'd imagine doing it when the leaves are down, how much more expansive that view
is. Yeah, 360 views. It was amazing. I definitely like hiking in the winter more, and it's not because I like the cold. It is because of the views. It is because of slightly less crowded trails. You're not walking through mud. But it is totally different as far as the scenery. You know, there's not flora and fauna, but there are grand vistas, you know. So I think it's kind of nice to hit both.
Yeah, I've done the Catskills in the winter and in the other three seasons. And it was a lot of fun to go up and do them in the winter.
Yeah.
And see what they look like with the trees being empty and snow all over the place.
Plus, once you get out there with your snowshoes on and you actually use a snowshoeing trail when you have to, it's kind of cool because it really is just, it's a sidewalk. You know, so in the summer, you might be scrambling, you might be, you know, really like
banging your feet on roots and rocks and
tripping, spraining your ankle. In the winter, it's a walk, you know. You still might have to get your hands dirty a little bit, but that's why I carry an ice axe, and not because I have to, it just makes it easier.
So, Mike, I'll start with you. What do you guys have coming up? Because I know you do separate videos at times, even though you're working on the channel together. Anything coming up for you, Mike?
So over the next month, I'll start by saying I've had some technical difficulties lately, and I would actually be in the South right now if it weren't for some car troubles. But I do have a trip coming up in the next month or so here. I'm going to go down to the Asheville area and Tom and I made a trip down to the Smokies this past spring. So I'm going to do some things in that area. And then I'm also going to hit the Red River Gorge in Kentucky on this next swing. Then, you know, like we said, we're looking at the Long Trail this summer, and I'm going to be doing a lot of section hiking on the Ice Age Trail over the next few months.
Do you see yourself eventually finishing up the Ice Age Trail?
That's the goal. Yeah. I mean, again, I don't see myself through hiking it, at least not in the near future, but I'd like to become a 1,000-miler. My goal is over the next 2 years.
Tom and I live in he lives further north than I do, but we live in the same area pretty much. And we have that advantage with the Finger Lakes Trail. And it's pretty cool that you can just get out and pick some of these trails off in sections if you want. I'm doing that with the Finger Lakes Trail. And I said in the intro, that's how I stumbled upon you guys. So I was looking for information on the Finger Lakes Trail. And I think your video was on the Letchworth Trail, which is part of the Finger Lakes Trail system. Like I said, I'm down to 160, 140 miles, something like that I've got to finish up. So I was looking for something to motivate me. But I did that Letchworth section, and that was a lot of fun. I enjoyed that.
That Letchworth section of trail really has been just somewhere where I've kind of gone to over the years when I'm just looking for a quick getaway. One year, we actually had a horribly unprepared weekend out there, me and one of my buddies. It was late November, and we didn't bring a shelter. We brought a tarp that we were not planning on using as a shelter, but just that we were going to hang in front of the lean-to. But we didn't actually hit the trail until early afternoon. And then in November in New York, as I hope, well, maybe not everyone knows, the sun goes down by about 5 o'clock. So we ended up walking in the dark, missed the lean-to, actually weren't even at the right trailhead that we thought we had got on at because, you know, we lost cell phone service and just took a guess. we're not prepared. And we ended up having a very cold, borderline survival night just out on the Finger Lakes Trail in Letchworth because we couldn't find the lean-to. We didn't have anything to set up a proper tent or campsite. And we, you know, honestly had to maybe break a rule or two. But it's what it took to keep us safe and alive. We cuddled all night, stuck my dog between us, not this dog, but my old pit bull. I rolled out of the tarp, I think 4 or 5 times at least. And just kind of kept getting up and crawling back in. My buddy, he has slightly different memories of it because he was on the fire side of this thing, and I was the one that kept rolling out the back of the shelter. But sometimes you just do what you got to do to stay alive, and even those accessible things can become a real kind of test of fortitude over the evening. Like I started to say, it really is just a place that's kind of a go-to at this point. In the Finger Lakes, I'm often asked by people like, where's just a nice quick place to test out my gear, to just have a quick overnight, to, you know, go snowshoeing, skiing. And my answer is almost always the Finger Lakes Trail. I think that I have probably decided not to do it as a through hike, at least not in the foreseeable future here. But just like you, Martin, I'm looking to, kind of section hike the whole thing. I bought the whole, Finger Lakes Trail map binder. So I've got, all 200 something pages. Honestly, you really can just kind of take a look, be like, yeah, I'll do this little stretch. Make sure you got a lean-to there that you can use. But it's set up for through hikers to be able to do it, which means that an overnight hiker certainly can too, with a little bit less planning.
I've done stretches, and over the years it was for shakedown hikes, and you're right. It's close enough to home. You can just pack your stuff out and head out for an overnighter, and said it's, you won't be that miserable. If there's something that didn't work the way you wanted to, or something you want to change out, it's only an overnighter and you're not that far from home.
Worst case, you cuddle your buddy and you burn a pine tree.
Just don't reverse it. Some buddies might drive you to do that.
Yeah, they might.
But the long trail hike coming up, I really would love to get you guys back on and we could talk about this. Either if you want to do a little work up to it before you get out there, and I can even work with you guys. You want to even from the trail at some point, check in and give us a report. But at the minimum, I really want to have you guys back on to talk about your experience, because the trail means so much to me. And I just love hearing other people's experiences on the trail.
That'd be awesome. I think we'd love that.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Any advice for that person that's just going around YouTube thinking, maybe I want to try it? That's somebody that's maybe from their early 20s on up into their early 70s, let's say. I know it's a wide. Any advice?
Just do it. You know, I would say, first of all, you do you, right? So whatever doing it means to you, just start today, right? Just get the camera out, go out and to your local trail and give it a shot, right? There's nothing stopping you. YouTube, I think, is a really easy thing to sort of get started in. Sure, I think there are people that have been out there doing it for a long time that do really well, great production value and things like that. There's always something to aspire to, right? But I think there's a great community of creators on YouTube. I think that's been one of the big surprises for me, is that people are really welcoming and helpful. And I think that's been great. I've made some friends through YouTube that I wouldn't have otherwise. I would say to people, you'd be surprised at what you can do if you let yourself. So you do you and get started today. That's what I would tell people.
And that's great to hear, because you're right, with YouTube and with podcasting, first and foremost, it's fun. I'm not making a living from this. Very few people do. We do it because it's fun, and because for me, I get to talk to people like the two of you and learn about your experiences and share them with other people. And what podcasting and YouTubing does is it allows us to do that with, whether it's friends, people we haven't seen in years or lost touch with, or relatives. And I think that's great. And that's an added benefit to what you're doing. Tom, what would you tell that person? Now, you've got more experience than Mike, and your experience, as I said, goes back to when you were a young man.
Yeah. Look up local regulations for where you're staying. you know, Adirondacks have some pretty specific rules. Otherwise, most places you're kind of following leave no trace rules. So know what those are. Go take some research into that, but don't get paralysis. What did you say?
Paralysis by analysis.
Yeah, paralysis. Don't do that.
I wish I could take credit for that, but it was actually, I think it was Einstein that came up with that. It was Einstein. Paralysis by analysis. You know,
just get out there and enjoy it. Just get out there and enjoy it. I mean, you can hopefully, if you're, you know, real uncomfortable, find someone that can go with you. But honestly, I deal with people quite regularly in my retail job that really don't necessarily know what they're doing. And the hardest thing with them dealing with them is that they're afraid to ask questions about things they don't know. And I don't know what they don't know. Right. So like if you go to a camping store, pick someone's brain, people work at camping stores because they like camping. And they like talking about it. So I'm going to say for every retailer out there, we are here for you. We don't make huge amounts of money. It's because we like it. So we would rather talk to you about, what do I do if I see a bear? Then we want to talk to somebody about what color Patagonia looks good on them, you know? So feel free to ask people, and don't be afraid to just do those quick overnights. Find somewhere like the Finger Lakes Trail or the Ice Age Trail or whatever you got near you. Tons of places just have, a quick out and back loop that's 5 miles total, right? And there's no reason that they can't be your intro to backpacking. Just do a mile hike away from your car. Worst case scenario, you go back to your car. You know, it's not the end of the world. Don't be afraid to try, and don't be afraid to fail. Right.
Yeah. And there's something nearby for everyone. I grew up in North Jersey across the river from New York City. I started backpacking at 7 years old. Yeah. We'd go up to the Delaware Water Gap, that area. If you look, there's a trip out there nearby for everyone. Where can we find you guys? I know you're on, in addition to the YouTube channel, you can give us that information and any other social media you're on.
Yeah, sure. So we're on YouTube, Out on Trail, same as on Instagram, and then we're also on Twitter at @out_trail. Couldn't get the Out on Trail, so fill in the gap. And then Tom, did you want to say anything about your own social media?
Nah, I mean, if you find it, that's cool. I take pictures on my Instagram, but that's it. A lot of it's my dog.
You do a lot of hiking with your dog, Tom?
A decent amount. This time of year, it's a little rough. He's a small guy, right? So I have a rat terrier chihuahua mix. So he weighs about 20 pounds. He's a little bit chunky, but he's a good sport. He'll always go with me just about anywhere. But temperatures how they are, I don't want to worry about him. But he's managed to do some overnights with me. There's a couple things that have popped up on the channel and a couple more that I think we have coming, where, he's my buddy. I don't like to go alone anywhere. And so he'll come with me. And then he actually managed to climb Mount Mansfield all the way up and down himself. He was a little mad at me by the end of the day. I could see it in his eyes, but it was a good one. This summer, I'm not sure if we're going to plan on taking him with us on the long trail or not. Might kind of have him dropped off for, he might section hike a little bit. Yeah. He's a good boy. Just try not to overwhelm him too much.
Well, we'll make sure we put links in the description for the episode to your YouTube and to your social media. Mike and Tom, keep up the good work. I think you guys are doing a great job with your videos. I think this is good information to put out there for newbies. and to try to inspire people, not just newbies, but maybe just inspire somebody that hasn't been out there in years backpacking. I love what you guys are doing, and I'm really looking forward to talking to you in the future about your long trail hike. Thanks for coming on the podcast, guys.
Absolutely. And one last note, if you can't find someone to ask questions to, then feel free to hit up Mike on one of those things. And if I have any input, I'll let him know.
Hey, yeah, we're happy. We're pretty social. Tom's more social than I am. But yeah, we love, again, the community aspect of YouTube and Instagram, too, is great. And we've met a lot of fantastic people, and we look forward to meeting even more. So thanks for having us. It's been awesome.
It has been. And just one last note, all seriousness, Tom, you start talking to somebody about something they have a passion for, and they'll just go on and on and on. People should never be afraid to walk up to a hiker or a backpacker and ask a question, because we love talking about this stuff. But guys, it's been a lot of fun. Make sure you go to papabearhikes.com, check out what we have going on there. There's a link for the book. There's a link for Patreon. There's a link for all of our social media, and see what Gang and I are up to. Go to our YouTube channel, Martin Outside. Everybody, go outside, have some fun, and be safe.
Thanks for listening. If you like this podcast, please feel free to leave a review. If you found it helpful or useful or just entertaining, let us know. We can be contacted at papabearhikes@gmail.com or check us out at papabearhikes01 on Instagram. Thanks for listening. Get outside and have a great day.
This episode of Papa Bear Hikes has been brought to you by Avalon Publicity. Avalon Publicity, increasing the digital footprint of content creators and skilled professionals via website development and social media services. For more information about Avalon Publicity, go to their website, avalonbusiness.org. That's avalonbusiness.org.